Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, could be, maybe it's Mitt Romney. Know you love this week in Mormons, original Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper in Utah, and Jell-O salad foods, oh, you're gonna love this show.
Welcome to This Week in Mormons. This is the Twim Sisters here, Tiffany Hales
and Ariane Hale Smith.
We have a lot to talk about today, and we have a great episode. But first, we need to talk about a few traditions.
Tradition.
Yes, it is summer, and we have many traditions in summer and many traditions that are tied into quirky Mormon cultural things.
That's right. So we first thing we just have to talk about, because it's on our mind, is family reunions. I have two family reunions within the next 10 days. You have one.
I have one, except I kind of might be bailing on that one, but
which is not going to go over well. This is her way of telling the world. So if my aunts are listening, they are not going to be happy.
Yes. Well, let's backtrack and talk about the family reunion that we went to in July, and then we'll talk about the two that are coming up for you and the one for me. So in July, one of my uncles on my dad's side of the family, usually once a year in the summertime, they try and get all their kids together. They have seven kids who would obviously be our cousins. And so we kind of crashed their family reunion in July.
That is the way to do it. Crashing the family reunion, you show up, you visit, you leave.
Exactly. So we showed up for Saturday night fun. They'd already eaten their dinner, so we waited till dinner was over with, and we showed up and we got to visit with everybody.
That was fun.
And catch up, and then we left. So that was to us a perfect family reunion.
It was very, very good. So next one is we have coming up this weekend on our mom's side of the family.
Yes, our mom's side of the family.
All of our mom's sisters, and this one happens every 3 years?
Every three or four years. Something like that.
So they're doing it in Utah this year. First time. Usually it's been in Idaho, but we're moving to Utah this year.
Because about half the family lives in Utah and half the family lives here in Idaho. So they decided in deference to those members of the family who live in Utah and travel to Idaho that perhaps we would do one down in Utah.
Yeah. And this is a fun one. We love this one. It's short. I mean, you get that many family members. The family is so big on that side.
Yes.
There's six girls on that side of the family.
Yes. So my mom was one of six sisters, and my mom has passed away, but her other remaining sisters are still alive, and each of them have a whole bunch of kids.
Lots of kids.
So, lots of cousins.
So lots of cousins and cousins with kids. And
exactly.
Some cousins now are about to be getting close to the age of being no one's a grandma yet.
No one's a grandma yet.
So it's big and it's fun, and it's like a one day thing, which
exactly.
is great. It's easy for families to come for one day.
Exactly. But I'm bailing. This has been a hard decision, but I think I mentioned before that I'm a lawyer, and just the last 10 days, my trial calendar has been so seriously out of control. Every day I wake up, I go to court, I'm in front of a judge, I'm beating up on people, people are beating up on me. I just told Ariane a couple of days ago, I said, I can't do it. I'm so far behind in everything in my life. The fact of getting in a car and driving to Utah right now kind of makes me want to just curl up in the fetal position and cry.
I know. It's so sad.
So I'm kind of bummed to miss it. But let's talk about some of the traditions that they do at that reunion whenever we have that one.
That one is a fun one. So they always do a big meal. It's usually something really easy like pizza. And then people bring sides, because when you get that many people, how do you feed that many people?
Exactly.
It's a dilemma.
Exactly.
But they usually do something very easy.
For the Saturday night meal.
For the Saturday night meal.
Everybody's on their own for like lunch usually and breakfast.
Yeah, on their own for lunch. And in the afternoon, people kind of do their own activities. Some people swim, some people hike. And
well, they always have a craft.
Oh, right. There's always a craft.
In fact, I was kind of supposed to help with one of the crafts.
Oh, you're so in trouble.
I know. I'm so in trouble. The answer going to kill me. But I spoke with my partner in crime, my cousin Alicia, and she's going to
take over.
She's going to pick up the slack for me. So I'm going to owe her one. But one of the funnest things that we do at this reunion is we always do an auction. So everybody brings some item to auction off, and then you buy tickets. And I shouldn't say it's not really an auction per se.
It's more like a raffle.
It's more like a raffle.
You buy raffle tickets, and then if there's an item that you want, you can dump all your tickets in the bucket for that item.
Exactly.
And if there's something you don't want, you don't even have to put your tickets in.
Yes.
So it's really fun. The most popular things, of course, are memorabilia from grandma and grandpa and
exactly.
things. And then the money goes to pay for the next reunion.
Exactly.
The dinner at the next reunion.
And I might have been accused on one or two occasions of being a bit competitive in the raffle.
She's brutal. You are, and you always, always get what you want. That's why people get mad, because every time you get that like coveted item.
I really do.
She has the best luck.
I am a chip off the Hertha block. Hertha is our mother. Hertha always got what she wanted. Hertha was never denied anything that she wanted. And so, you know, just consider myself a chip off the Hertha block. See, the aunts and the cousins should be glad that I'm not going, because now I'm going to give somebody else an opportunity to get those coveted items.
That's true. Maybe it'll be my year.
Maybe it'll be your year. But anyway, just in talking to our friends, we've been seeing a lot of our friends on Facebook doing family reunions, and there's so many wild things that people do. You know, everything from, you know, oh, let's all wear the same T-shirt, or let's have every family have a different colored T-shirt.
Pictures. Devotionals.
Yes.
Crafts, activities. There's all kinds of things you can do at family reunions. So.
Yes, and should say, I mean, we are mentioning the highlights of family reunions, but I think you cannot discuss family reunion without discussing the fact that not everybody in the family necessarily like each other or get along sometimes, which can add just a whole other dimension to your family reunion.
Yeah.
For example, we have a have a brother, and we love our brother. His wife, maybe not so much.
It would be a problem if she showed up at the family reunion.
It would be a problem if she showed up at the family reunion. But I think she's sufficiently intimidated enough by me, she won't come to the family reunion.
Yes. So after the Utah family reunion, my family gets to keep on driving because we have another family reunion 2 days later.
Oh, so
we're going to keep on driving down to California. We have reunion on my husband's side with all of my husband's siblings. There's six kids in his family. And so my in-laws are great. This is the second time we've done it. We did it 2 years ago. They get a big house, and they're so generous. They pay for this house and say, everybody come, and we'll do this reunion. And so it's fun. It's great. We had a great time 2 years ago. They did it on the Oregon coast, and we were there. But one thing we've noticed is now that we're all having kids, it changes the dynamic.
Yes, 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 it does.
Just a little bit. You know, people have different parenting styles, and that's totally fine.
Yes.
And that's good as long as everybody's on the same page with their parenting.
I try not to interfere with anybody's parenting.
Yes, you gotta let people do it their own way.
Exactly. You know, I had a good friend of mine who used to say about parenting, she used to say, you know, you make your own heaven or hell. So
It's very true. So there was an incident at the family reunion a couple years ago where some names were called at the dinner table that I can't say here. And it was over some kind of kid issue, and it was resolved quickly, and everybody moved on, and it was totally fine. It's not a big deal. But my husband, he's so funny. He kind of preemptively thought, you know, before the email this time, I'm just going to send, or before the reunion this time, I'm just going to send out an email so everybody's on the same page.
Ooh, so he sent a preemptive email.
A preemptive email
to all of his siblings and their respective spouses.
Yes, before the reunion. Oh. This is kind of his, like, let's just get clear the air. Let's just put it out there.
Okay. So what did he say in his preemptive email?
The preemptive email was basically like, hey, let's acknowledge that, you know, we all parent differently and that's okay. Let's also acknowledge that all of our kids are probably a little bit worse than we think they are. And then
No, not my kids. They're perfect.
And then he also just kind of said, can we just kind of all agree to let everybody parent their own kids and not interfere unless, like, you know, obviously if somebody's in danger or if property is being damaged, like, that needs immediate, you know.
If violence is occurring.
Yes. But basically, if somebody's kid is annoying you, just, you know, suck it up and ignore it.
You are the adult in this situation. So how was this email received?
Oh, it was good. I think everybody's on board.
Okay.
It was good.
Okay. So, well, you will have to do a follow-up and let us know if everybody played in their own parenting box and didn't try and get in somebody else's parenting sandbox.
Yes, I think it'll be fine. It'll be fun. So we're there for, it's a long one, like 5 days.
Oh, wow.
And it's close to the coast, so we'll do a lot of beach my husband's parents divide it up really. They do a great job dividing it up. They give everybody a turn to cook dinner, and everybody has a turn to pick the activity for the afternoon. And I guess we're adding devotionals this year, so everybody gets turn to do the devotional.
Well, and I know that your mother-in-law is very musical, she always tries to arrange some sort of a musical thing to go.
So I'm sure there will be music, so it'll be a good time. We're excited. And the kids have so much fun together. They love seeing their cousins.
Oh, that's great. And that really is the best part of it, because I know as a kid, you know, when we would get together with cousins that we didn't see because they lived, you know, a significant distance away. Those are some of my best memories as a kid, is hanging out with those cousins.
Me too. And my girls love it. They've got lots of cousins on that side, and they have so much fun. So it'll be good.
All right. So that brings us to our next tradition that we want to talk about, the 24th of July. We just finished that up approximately about 10 days or so ago. And so I find the 24th of July a very interesting celebration. Of course, if you live in the state of Utah, it is a state holiday.
I know. You know what? My kids are like not understanding this. They went to church, you know, the Sunday before. Uh-huh. The 24th, and they had been talking about it in primary, and my 7-year-old came home and she said, Daddy, does this mean it's a holiday tomorrow and you don't have to go to work? And he was like, I wish.
Yes, Idaho's not quite Mormon enough to have the 24th of July off.
We're not quite there. She was dreaming. She was hoping.
Anyway, it was pretty fun just to see all the pictures on Facebook of all the sorts of different parades. But you know what? If you get over into eastern Idaho, you know, they don't do the community parades really over here in western Idaho. But I was talking with a friend of mine who grew up in the Burley area. Uh-huh. And they do parades all over in eastern Idaho. They do.
I didn't know that.
She was talking about, she lives in her parents live in Oakley, and in Oakley that they had a parade down there. And so in eastern Idaho, which has a little higher Mormon population, they do the parade.
Oh, that's
here. Our steaks celebrate. How did your steak celebrate?
My steak didn't celebrate.
No.
Can I just tell you, I have never lived in a steak that did a big 24th of July thing ever. I mean, I think when we lived in California, our steak would have like a picnic every year around the 24th, but our Oregon steak didn't really anything. No, and Indiana didn't really. I have never really celebrated it. And I've never lived in Utah during the summer when it was the 24th of July. So this is a very foreign holiday for me.
We have.
What did your steak do?
You need to move a little further over to the north, sweetie. So no, in my steak, they have a big celebration. In fact, they start every year with a softball tournament amongst the wards. And so the softball tournament usually starts on a Tuesday, and it goes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night.
Oh,
and the softball
tournament.
That's intense. It's so intense. And it's like super competitive. And I have to tell you, there's like rules for like how many women they have to have on the team, how many men. So there was one year that they were like short on women. Uh-huh. And I had been the girls' camp director, and one of the counselors in our bishopric had helped me out with girls' camp, and he said, "You're going to pay me back by playing softball." And I was like, "Oh, you don't want me on the softball team. Trust me, you want me on the other team's softball team." And he's like, "Nope, you're a woman. We need another girl. You fit the bill." So I played softball.
Oh, you did?
Yes. I stood in the outfield and I refused to bat. Anyway, so they do that for 3 days, and then the Saturday before the 24th of July, they have a big breakfast down at the steak. The steak has this huge grill that they own that's a grill on a trailer that they pull around, and the steak presidency and high councilman cook eggs and bacon and whatnot, and they have booths with all sorts of carnival games for kids. It's a big deal.
Okay, that's fun. Okay, does anybody dress up in pioneer attire?
No.
You don't go that far.
There is no pioneer attire.
You have your limits.
There is no parade.
Okay. Because when we were little, we used to do parades. I remember that growing up.
Yes, and our stake growing up, we would get our little red wagon out. It would be a kid's parade, not an adult parade. We'd decorate our wagon and parade around in pioneer clothing.
Those were fun times.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, maybe I need to come to your stake breakfast next year.
I'll invite you. We were bad. We didn't go this year. We slept in.
Oh. Well, see how festive you are.
Hey, but my husband participated in one game of the softball tournament.
Oh, there you go.
So, okay. Moving on.
All right. So, another tradition that we just passed last Sunday was Fifth Sunday.
Yes, Fifth Sunday.
Fifth Sunday lessons. I always look forward to Fifth Sunday. I get to sit by my husband in the third hour, and it's kind of fun.
Now, see, I never get to sit by my husband in the third hour, because what they do in our ward is they send the young men and the young women to go take care of primary. So the girls always have to teach the lessons during the third hour, and the boys go into sharing time. So he has to go into sharing time to make sure the priests are behaving themselves in sharing time.
He's got to go supervise.
He has to supervise. So anyway, so what did you guys do this last Sunday for your fifth Sunday?
Let's see. What was our lesson? We had a great lesson. It was just our bishopric, and they taught about doing all, the basic things you need to do to keep your testimony strong. FHE, family prayer, personal prayer, scripture study. They just really hit on it, and were emphasizing how important that is to maintain the spirit in your home and to grow testimonies with your kids. It was a lot about, strengthening your families and your kids. So it was good. It was a good lesson.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So ours focused on the temple open house. So we talked last time, the Meridian Temple is being built nearby. Both Ariane and I are going to be in that temple district. And they have scheduled the temple open house for October 21st through November 11th. So our ward mission leader got up, and he had made these cute little cards, because we don't have the pass out cards yet. And he talked about how to invite your neighbors and friends and coworkers to the temple open house. Which, I actually really enjoyed. I think, there's a lot of curiosity surrounding the temple. And so it is nice to be able to say, hey, this building's going to be open for a period of time.
Right.
Why don't you come with me, and you can go inside and you can see what it's all about.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm excited. It'll be neat. I've never been living in a place while a temple was opened.
Oh.
So, other than when I was a little kid and Boise was opened, which I have no memories of.
Yeah.
But, I'm excited. I've never been actually around for this.
Well, this is kind of my second go around, because in 2012, they actually shut the Boise Temple down in 2011 for a year for renovations, and they rededicated it in 2012. And so when they rededicated it, they obviously had an open house then and did the cultural celebration.
The cultural celebration. Okay, we have to talk about this tradition, because I kind of don't understand this tradition. I totally understand it. And maybe I've never been to one. Maybe I would understand it more if I went. I totally get it for like a temple in South America or Africa or Germany. The apostles and the prophet are going to go visit, and the people will share their culture. I really, really do not understand it for Boise, Idaho. because what do we have to share? I know that sounds bad. We have a culture, I'm sure, but it's the same culture.
In other words, you're saying it's not that much different than the Utah culture.
No, it's nothing new for them. So I don't know, but I've never been to one, so maybe I would understand it more if I went and saw the glorious, spectacular display.
Don't worry.
You've been, right? Did you go last time?
I did, but you probably won't get to go this time. The only reason, and let me explain to you, the only reason I got to go last time was because I was in Young Women's at the time, and they had to have Young Women's leaders there. Because they, between just the sheer number of kids that they had at the when they did the cultural celebration for the Boise Temple, no parents could come. It was just kids and their young women and young men leaders.
Not even the parents could go watch their kids?
Not even the parents could go. It was in the Taco Bell Arena.
Which is big.
Which is big. That's Boise State's basketball arena. But not even the parents could come.
Wow.
I'm trying to think if they live streamed it on the internet maybe. I don't remember. But it was quite the production. So I'll have to tell you what our steak did. So what they did is the kids each, they had everybody divided by steaks. And I suspect, you know, with the Meridian Open House and the New Meridian Temple District, there's only 16 steaks in the Temple District.
So it'll be not as big.
When they rededicated Boise, I'm guessing there were probably 25, 26 steaks. Okay. And so there was a lot more steaks than kids. And so what they had done is they had given our steak an assignment. Mm-hmm. And so the kids every Wednesday for about 5 or 6 weeks had to go and practice. Now, don't laugh when I tell you this. Okay. So the assignment that our kids had is they had 5 or 6 of these maypoles. Okay. And they had these ribbons around these maypoles. And so they had these maypoles set up in our gym, and the girls had the ribbons, and the girls like weaved themselves in and out of the ribbons to create this ribbon effect around the maypole. Uh-huh. And then the boys had a piece of plastic. So the boys were the river. So the girls were this maypole, and the boys had this piece of plastic that they wound themselves through the maypole to look like a river.
Okay.
And the song that they were doing this to, hold it, hold it. Give Said the Little Stream.
Okay.
only it was Give Said the Little Stream doo-wop version. You know, it wasn't your typical Give Said the Little Stream. It was Give Said the Little Stream. Give, oh, give. Give, oh, give.
Oh, my goodness. So are the kids singing or is this just a recording?
It's just a recording.
Oh, my. So I want to know, how do the teenagers feel about this?
Well,
especially the teenage boys.
You know,
Is this like dragging them to Mutual every week to get them to learn the dance?
Yeah. So at the time when they did the Boise celebration, which, like I said, was about 5 years ago, Isaac at that time was 14, and then Shelby was 13. And so, you know, Shelby didn't mind so much, but Isaac, as you can imagine, just did not have a good attitude about this.
Right.
But fortunately, he didn't have to do much of anything but join the crowd and, you know, hold the blue plastic and go through the maypoles and create the river effect. So, and Darren, of course, was in Young Men, so Isaac didn't really have a choice about this. But I have to tell you, in my ward on Sunday, they called a really good friend of mine and her husband to be the dance directors. Uh-huh. And I saw her in Sunday school, and I said, Christy, I have one word for you. And she said, what? And I said, Mark.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is my 13-year-old. Yes. I thought she was going to fall off the chair. I said, good luck with that.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
So
that boy is not going to be happy.
We will keep you updated on the cultural celebrations of the Meridian Temple and how this proceeds. But you know, the overall production when they did Boise, it was very impressive.
Okay.
And the kids worked really hard, and all of them, I think it's less about the production for the parents to see, as I think it's more about the experience that the kids have.
For the kids.
For the kids.
It's supposed to be a great experience for them.
Exactly.
Right? And did you see that with your youth?
Yeah.
I'm sure it makes the whole new temple very memorable for
exactly.
them. It's something they'll remember for the rest of their
exactly.
lives.
Exactly. It's something mm-hmm. they will remember for the rest of their lives. And, you know, Shelby is lucky enough. Because she was so young when they did Boise, and mm-hmm. now she is going to be on the upper end of being old for a teenager when they do Meridian,
right.
that she's actually going to get to participate in two temple cultural celebrations.
Wow. Which that is pretty unique.
That's very, very unique.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, I'll anxiously wait. Maybe I'll get to actually see this one and I'll know what it's about.
Well, if not, like I said, I'm pretty sure last time they streamed it on the internet, so you could watch it on the internet.
Yeah, I bet they will, because I think Idaho Falls, you could go see it at one of the stake centers if you yeah. wanted to. I just didn't.
Oh, you know what? I'm pretty sure that, I think they did that too. I think yeah. you could see it at the...
I just didn't go. I should have gone.
See it at the stake yeah. center. Okay. All right. Well, moving on.
Okay. Oh, we have to talk news. Okay.
Yes.
This is funny because we just thought it would be a very slow news week because Al and Jeff just recorded last week. So yeah. we thought, it'll be a pretty slow news week.
Yes.
My goodness. Lots of stories have popped
lots
up this week.
Lots of stories.
We had a hard time narrowing it down to
yes.
what we wanted to discuss.
Yes, we did. So, you know, we really need to lead with a big story that broke yesterday.
Yes.
So you may recall a month or so ago when we did our podcast, we discussed a story that Elder Holland had shared with New Mission presidents. And it was a story about a missionary from Pocatello who gets called to Los Angeles and supposedly finds his brother down there in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know,
brings him back.
Brings yeah. him back. Brings mm-hmm. the wayward son back. And you may recall, I specifically said during that podcast, I said, and I quote, I would not have believed this except it came from a general authority.
I know.
That is specifically what I said. And the reason that I said this is I like to think that I have a pretty finely tuned BS meter,
right.
for lack of a to be as diplomatic as possible. In my job, every day, people are telling me stories, and so I have finely tuned my skills to be able to decide, is this a story that makes sense? Plus, in court every day, I'm having to pick apart people's stories.
Right.
So that's why I was like, ew, wow, you know. But again, you know, I am indoctrinated to believe that, you know, general authorities speak the truth.
Well, anyway. Especially Elder Holland.
Exactly. Especially Elder Holland.
But So it turns out.
So it turns out that what had happened was they had to retract the story, and they have subsequently taken the story down, because what had happened, and I'm going to quote the statement that Elder Holland makes, as he said, a few weeks ago when speaking to New Mission presidents at the Missionary Training Center, I shared a story about two brothers just as I had heard it from the individuals who knew the family and had heard it recounted by a family member. Within a few days, my office was contacted by the family, who expressed concern that some of the elements of the account were not accurate due to embellishment by a family member. So he had not spoken directly with the family when he shared this story. He heard it from someone who heard it from a family member
right.
close to this family. And there are certainly parts of it that were true. It was definitely true that they had a wayward son who had left home, and he had returned home, but he had returned home before this youngest son actually left on his mission. So there was no meeting of the sons
right.
on the mission. But once he returned home, he began working with the missionaries and doing those things that he needed to do to put his life in order. And so Elder Holland continues on, and he says, as a courtesy to me, the family contacted my office wanting to me to be aware of the inaccurate parts of the story and offering their help in avoiding any perpetration of those elements in the account that I had heard. I'm deeply touched by their humility and courage in doing so, and as an equal courtesy to them, I'm withdrawing the story completely and request that it not be shared further.
Right.
So this is kind of big
yeah.
because, first of all, this story got a lot of traction. It was all over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
In Fast and Testimony meeting in July, our former bishop shared it.
Oh.
And I know a lot of people shared it. And, you know, and I say, first of all, kudos to Elder Holland.
Yeah, I think he handled it so
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
I mean, can you imagine? He must have been so upset when you heard.
Oh,
the pressure that they have
exactly
on them to, you know, exactly. share information and to get something like yeah. that wrong. I'm sure he was
devastated.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and when I said my statement that, you know, I wouldn't have otherwise believed it if it hadn't come from a general authority, is I had made the assumption that the story was fact-checked.
I know.
Because, you know, as a lawyer, whenever I hear a story or people tell me something, I'm like, what are the facts? You know, I am constantly fact-checking everything. And so I had made the assumption that he had probably had some sort of direct contact with the family.
Right, me too.
And the family had confirmed it. And apparently that's not what occurred in the case.
Right.
And maybe that's a lesson to all of us when sharing what we like to call faith-promoting stories.
I know.
That we fact-check.
That's true. And I think it's so interesting. I think had this been shared in general conference, no doubt every little fact would have been checked.
Oh,
but
yes.
Whereas this was just a training meeting, and I think we just live in such a different age now where training meetings probably used to be more casual, and not everything you said in a training meeting was going to hit the internet and go viral within 24 hours.
Exactly.
Not that that means they shouldn't fact check.
Yeah.
And I think obviously this will be a lesson and they probably will start looking into it a little bit more, but I hope it doesn't change. You know, one thing I love about when a general authority comes mm-hmm. to visit for state conference is they're just a little bit more, it's
they're
not so
they're more
scripted.
Casual.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's more casual. It's not so scripted. And I just hope this doesn't make them too gun shy.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Because I'm sure the pressure that is on them now, any state conference that they go to, anything they say can go viral instantly.
Yes.
So I hope that there's a good balance between, we do need to make sure, we do need to, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's and make sure the stories are good. But also I hope it doesn't make them too, you know.
Exactly.
Too much wanting to stick to the script. And
well, you know, I will let you know because we have state conference in 2 weeks and they announced on Sunday that Elder Raz Band is coming to our state conference.
That'll be
so
fun.
He was supposed to come in January, but we had too much snow in January, so they had to cancel it. And so they did get him rescheduled for August. But, you know, the other thing I wonder about this retraction is, you know, the retraction has not received nearly the media play or the media attraction that the original story did. So, you know, I kind of wonder if this story is going to end up in Mormon folklore.
It could live on for years.
It could live on for years.
Okay, which reminds me, I was telling you about this document that my husband came across. He was a seminary, early morning seminary teacher for 3 years when we lived in Oregon. And when he was on the website, you know, they have a special website for seminary teachers.
I did not know they have a special website for seminary teachers.
Some type of special thing for seminary teachers to get on and look at materials. There was a document on there called Spurious Materials in Circulation. And it was a whole document on this site for seminary teachers with rumor and additional information. And there are just tons of things on there. We just had a blast reading through them and being like, some of these were like church rumors we had heard of before.
Yes.
But there were so many on there. We were like, I have never heard that. When was this being spread around the church? And then we'd kind of read the history on it and what the actual facts were. So it was just interesting. Everything from like missionary calls to China, quotes falsely being attributed to general authorities.
Yeah.
There was just a whole slew of things on there that they were kind of like debunking the myths on. So we need to do another podcast sometime.
Oh, yes.
And talk about myths and legends.
Sometime we will have to incorporate the Spurious Materials in Circulation into a podcast because this could be hilarious, talking about all the various faith-promoting rumors
that
go around.
I know. It's interesting. We all, you know, hear some of those over the years.
Exactly.
It happens.
But bottom line, you know, I really appreciated Elder Holland's transparency and coming forward and saying, you know, hey, this is a problem. And I think that even lends more credibility to him.
Yeah.
I'm not in the future going to look at, you know, his stories or his speeches and go, oh, is he making this up? Because there was never an intent in this case to falsify.
So. And great that he's, you know, willing to admit a mistake and
exactly
and own it. And it's a good reminder. They're human too.
They're human too. Exactly. Okay, so our next story that we want to talk about is we want to talk about a pair of missionary companions. And these gentlemen, they were missionary companions in 1995 when they were serving in the New Jersey Morristown Mission. And their names are, I know I'm going to mispronounce this first one because I'm awful at pronouncing names. He is, I believe, of Polynesian descent, but it's Meka of Avalava. Maybe?
Alava?
Alava. Anyway, he is a gentleman that suffered from some kidney disease. And in January of 2016, he received a call that he was in kidney failure. And so for 18 months, he had to do dialysis on his kidneys, 12 hours a week of dialysis. Well, his mission companion when he served in this New Jersey mission was a gentleman by the name of Brandon Sear. And when they were together, apparently they just immediately hit it off. They taught the same way. They had a lot of the same philosophies. They were really easy to work with together, and they were buddies, and they stayed in contact. And so as they stayed in contact, his mission companion said, you know, hey, I'm here if you need anything, you know, even if you need a kidney. Well, it turns out his mission companion was a perfect match for him for a kidney. And so he gave his companion his kidney. And so I love this story. Cool. I think it's really cool.
Maybe this one will be hit on in the next conference.
Maybe this one will be hit on. You know, the other thing that I wondered about, you know, because you have to be the right, I don't know if it's a DNA match or what the match is that you have to be if you're going to donate, you know, some sort of an organ. And it kind of made me wonder, I mean, these two had hit it off. Is that because they share some kind of common DNA match or something?
Ooh, maybe.
I know. So, you know, it'd be interesting to know people that you really relate to really well. Is it a DNA thing or is it a personality thing?
Yeah, I don't know. That was a cool one.
Okay. So.
Okay, next one we have to hit on. This one just came out today and it made me ragey. So we have to talk about it.
Anything that makes you ragey, we have to talk about.
I know. I didn't like it. So this was a Huffington Post story. And let's see, it was by a contributor named Jason Steed. And the title of the story was Jeff Flake Could Have Saved Us. He didn't.
Well, what do you expect? His last name is Flake.
So this story was all about the election. And he basically...
The Trump-Clinton election?
Yeah. This was an opinion piece. And he basically, his opinion is that Senator Jeff Flake, who is a Republican from Arizona... And also he talked about Mitt Romney did not do enough to sway the Mormon vote against Trump.
Okay.
So he gave them credit in that they did early on come out kind of against Trump.
Yes.
But he said that the Mormon voters in Utah could have voted for Hillary. And he mentioned several other states that there would have been enough Mormons to swing the vote for Hillary had the Mormons been influenced to not vote Republican and vote for Hillary instead of like Evan McMullen or Trump. And so he's saying basically that Romney and Senator Flake
dropped the ball.
They dropped the ball.
So we have Senator Flake and Mitt Romney to blame for our current presidential situation.
And apparently all the Mormons who can't think for themselves. So this is why I did not like this article.
This is why you were a little ragey.
This is why I was a little ragey. This guy is assuming that all the Mormons are... Okay, granted, he gives statistics. Mormons typically do vote Republican, which we all know.
We know that.
But the guy is assuming that all the Mormons are going to listen to Romney and Senator Flake and that they have this much power to sway us.
Exactly.
I don't like it.
Exactly. Well, you know, the other thing, too, that the article is not clear on is, for example, he talks about how Trump won Jeff Flake's state of Arizona by 80,000 votes and that there's over 400,000 Mormons. You know, we don't know. Are those 400,000 Mormons, are those all adults?
Right.
I'm guessing a good percentage of them might be children.
Huge chunk of those 400,000 have got to be kids.
Exactly. Who are not eligible to vote. And the other thing, too, is not every person votes. You know, just because you're an adult, you know, and you're eligible to vote doesn't necessarily mean that you know, a lot of people just it's not their thing. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of kind of really brass assumptions in this article.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't like it. He's playing the blame game.
Exactly.
I don't like it when people tell me who to vote for, and I don't like it when
people just assume that we as Mormons don't think independently for ourselves,
right,
and don't vote our conscience.
Right. I don't like it.
I agree.
Anyway, okay. We just had to hit on that because it struck a nerve.
All right. The next one I want to talk about, this is an essay that Jeff did, and he did this on the This Week in Mormons site.
Yeah. This one was good.
If you want to read his essay, I say go to the This Week in Mormons site. He's talking about polygamy in this essay. And speaking of things that tend to make Mormons ragey, especially Mormon women.
Yes.
Polygamy is a topic that makes the women a little ragey.
Definitely.
In fact, he starts it off by saying polygamy is something, a four-letter word for members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And we have kind of a long and sordid history with polygamy.
We do. It's kind of one of those things that, me personally, I like to stick it in a box and shove it in the corner.
Exactly.
Just exactly like you said. Well, I don't like to think about it or talk about it.
The other thing, too, is, you know, we have, in fact, speaking of the 24th of July and the celebration of pioneers, on both sides of our family, Ariane and I are sixth generation Mormons, going back on both our mother's side and going back on our father's side. And so, as you can imagine, we have a number of relatives who were polygamous. And again, you know, not to judge them, because I would never do that. I wasn't in their shoes. I don't know, you know, how they felt about it. But yes, I'm with you. Kind of the stick it in the box sort of a thing. It's not something that's required of me right now, so I'm not going to worry about it. But in any event, what the point of Jeff's essay in this thing is, he said that there's a new Gallup poll on polygamy that shows Americans increasingly accepting of the practice, with 17% of the respondents saying polygamy is morally acceptable, up from 14% in 2016. That represents a 21% increase over 1 year. And that's a pretty large jump in this case. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the acceptance of polygamy, because they also break it down by religion, and you know, those that have more religious beliefs are seemingly less tolerable,
right,
of polygamy in this essay. But, you know, one of the things that I thought about when I thought about, you know, why the increase, I wonder if it's tied to the acceptance of gay marriage. Because as society, we've kind of changed and evolved as to traditional marriage, and the definition of marriage has kind of expanded beyond the traditional one man, one woman. And so I wonder if that makes people a lot more accepting of polygamy.
Yeah.
I wonder how much shows like Sister Wives and Big Love, play into that. Obviously, I think everyone's probably in agreement. Polygamy that involves anybody getting married who's under the age of 18. No.
Right.
Never would that be acceptable. But anyway, I just wonder if those are some of the factors that are kind of shifting the views. I also don't see this this kind of going the way of gay marriage, so to speak.
Right.
I think one of the reasons that, you know, there was a lot of groundswell of support for gay marriage, which put pressure on the politicians to change things. Polygamy is illegal in all 50 states. And until there is a groundswell of support for polygamy, I don't really see that changing.
No, I don't think it's going to be changing, but it is really interesting to look at the numbers. And I do think there's a tie to the gay marriage thing.
I do.
Just people are becoming, you know, if you're going to support that, you have to kind of say, well,
other less traditional forms of marriage would be acceptable as well.
Yeah. And I wonder about the TV shows too. I am fascinated with that Sister Wives show.
I never miss Sister Wives. I love it.
I'm so curious. I just have to know how they live.
It it's kind of like a train wreck. You can't turn away. And not that their family's a train wreck, because it is. It's so fascinating to me to watch how Cody, who is the father in this case, navigates these four women that are his wives and navigates his children. And then it's equally as fascinating to see how the wives interact with each other, because some of the wives get along better than others.
I know. It's really like,
yeah,
it's interesting.
It's very interesting. And kind of, you know, for me, I think, okay, is this kind of like what it was for my polygamist ancestors, or is it just totally different because, you know, we're 150 years down the road and, you know, society and things like that are very different. I kind of tend not to think that it's that much different, because you see a lot of the jealousies and things like
that,
which make me think, yeah, that's probably something that has always been there.
I'm sure they had similar emotions.
Yes.
So the next story, this was actually a Daily Universe story. They published a story on a recent study that BYU did about Facebook.
And I love Facebook.
This one was fun. Researchers at BYU analyzed Facebook users and their purposes behind using the site. And they discovered that they could lump almost every Facebook user into one of four categories.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, Facebook has like a billion people on it.
I know.
Well, I don't know if it's a billion people, but they got a lot. If it's not a billion, it's got to be close to a billion.
It's a lot. So they broke it down into four categories of the types of Facebook user that you are. Okay. What type of Facebook user you are.
So, proving, once again, we are universally as humans all alike.
That's right. So this is what they found. The first type of Facebook user is the selfies. And these are the Facebook user that like to share a lot of information about themselves, frequently update their status, where they're going, what they're doing, all of those kinds of things. Second category of Facebook user is window shoppers. Window shoppers are the people who like to look at other people's Facebook activity but don't fully immerse themselves in sharing personal information. So they don't want to share a lot of stuff. They're kind of private.
Oh, I like what the researcher says here. They feel socially obligated to be on Facebook.
Yes. Oh, he also says these are the Facebook stalkers who go on all the time but never share anything about themselves.
Ooh.
So third type of Facebook user is the town criers. These are the cyber version of the traditional town criers. They're the people who share news, events, opinions.
Yes.
See a lot of those. Fourth type of Facebook user is relationship builders. These are people who use Facebook to maintain and build relationships. People who want to keep in touch and strengthen their relationships with people. This is how they keep in touch with friends from mission, friends from college, people they know. So I liked it. And, you know, I kind of thought it was spot on. They might need to add a category for Facebook users who are selling things. Like the MLM Facebook users.
It's painful.
But other than that, I think it's pretty spot on. And they did
You're
say...
You're right. They so need a fifth category for those who sell on Facebook.
Yeah. It's a thing. So they did say that people can fall into more than one category, or the primary category can change over time. Anyway, I liked it. I think it's spot on. I feel like I fall into two categories.
Okay. What two categories do you feel like you fall into?
I am a relationship builder because I do use it to keep in touch with lots of old friends.
Yes.
But I'm also a window shopper because I don't like to share a lot. And I like to get on it at night before I fall asleep. And I'm too exhausted to participate. So I'll just scroll through and look.
So. You know, I would have to say I'm with you in that category, in those two categories. You know, as far as the selfies, I don't think I ever, I mean, I'll post stuff about my kids and stuff, and I'll post stuff about, you know, my job and the crazy things that happened to me in court, but I don't do a lot of selfies.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, I am hands down a really good Facebook stalker.
You are. She's found people for me on Facebook before.
You know what? And you would be amazed. And one of the reasons that I have so finely honed my Facebook skills is in my job as a lawyer, because I do a lot of family law, you would not believe the stuff people put on Facebook. You know,
you use it to your advantage.
Oh, I so use it to my advantage. I mean, there have been a couple of times where I've pulled somebody's Facebook page up that's a defendant on the other side, and I will be like, manna from heaven. You are giving me manna from heaven, and you don't even know it. So, I do stalk, but I also fall into the relationship builder category as well, because, you know, my husband gives me a really bad time. He thinks that I'm up to all sorts of nefarious activity on Facebook. And I keep telling him, I'm like, no, I'm keeping up with my friends. And,
nice.
You know, in fact, I was going to mention this when we talked about family reunions. We're basically Facebook friends with all our cousins on both sides. And so that's one thing that makes going to a family reunion really fun, because you don't have to spend 20 minutes going, what have you done in the last 4 years?
Yeah.
You know it if you've been on Facebook.
That's true.
So I do like that.
Yeah, it's a great way to keep in touch. So interesting study by BYU.
A very, very interesting study. Uh-huh. And yes, and like I said, I'm with you. Let's ban the salespeople.
Yes. Okay. All right. Next story we wanted to cover. This was an AP story, but it was also run in the Daily Herald. This is about Elizabeth Smart. I guess that they are making a Lifetime movie about her story.
Really?
And she's actually participating in it. She has helped them through the whole process, and she's actually narrating the movie.
Which is crazy.
I know. And so it's, they said in this interview, she said it took, you know, many years for her to get to this place, to where she could do this. But she does it because she's trying to bring awareness and, you know, all the good things she does with her speaking and traveling around. So this movie is called I'm Elizabeth Smart, and it will debut on November 18th on Lifetime. And then also they are going to do a two-part documentary before the movie airs, I think November 12th and 13th on Lifetime, that will have new information on the case, and it'll talk about her life today and where she's at today. So this, I just thought this was interesting because I just remember the whole story.
Yes.
It was fascinating. I remember when they found her, we were all shocked. And I've been just amazed at how she's handled it all.
Exactly.
And how she's moved on with her life. So I hope the movie does it justice.
I hope so too.
It is Lifetime.
I know.
They have a reputation.
When I heard it was a Lifetime movie, I was like, really? Lifetime movies can sometimes be kind of cheesy.
I know.
But, you know, she says in the interview, you know, that, that she's really happy with the final product. And I have to tell you, I am an Elizabeth Smart news junkie.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the kidnapping happened, you know, my daughter was just a little over a year old, and we lived in Provo at the time, up on the bench in a neighborhood that was very similar to the type of neighborhood that Elizabeth lived in.
Right.
And just the thought that some stranger can come in your house and take your kid, I think that has got to be every parent's absolute worst nightmare.
It's totally creepy.
And I completely followed every detail of this story.
I remember you calling me the day that they found her, and you were like, did you hear the news?
I still remember where I was. Do you want to know where I was when they found Elizabeth Smart?
Where?
Let me tell you where I was when they found Elizabeth Smart. I think it was a Thursday afternoon, and I had been up in Salt Lake working. And I was driving home from work, and I had pulled off at the American Fork. I lived in Provo, but I had pulled off at the American Fork exit and run into Albertsons for something. I can't even remember why I had stopped, but I don't know if I needed to go to the bathroom or what I needed to do. But in any event, I went into Albertsons. I think I purchased something. And as I'm walking out of Albertsons, they had some TV monitors up there in the front part of the store, and they had broken, you know, to news coverage, you know, that they had an update on Elizabeth Smart, and Elizabeth Smart had been found. And I was blown away.
I know. I remember.
So blown away.
Everybody was just, nobody thought that would happen.
Nobody thought that would happen. So
it's an amazing story.
I will be watching the movie. I will be watching the documentary.
Yeah.
I can't help myself, but I am glad to hear that they're going to focus on her life now, because one of the things that I really respect about Elizabeth is that, you know, she took that advice her mother gave her, which is, he took 9 months of your life, don't let him take the rest of it.
Right.
And she has chosen to be a survivor, not a victim. And I think that that's one of the best messages that she sends to people that just have, you know, really awful things that happen to them.
Yeah, so for sure. She's
anyway, amazing, we'll have to do a movie review after we watch it in November.
We'll keep you posted, people. We're here for you.
Okay. All right. So the last story.
Oh, this is a good one.
Salivating at this story. This just broke today. A couple of episodes ago, we talked about, I think it was Swig. Wasn't that who you're?
Yeah, it was Swig. One of my former Beehives works there.
She was
giving us the lowdown on Swig.
Exactly.
We professed our love of cookies and soda.
Yes.
And our desire to have one in Boise.
Exactly. Well, in Utah, there's two different companies that run a similar type of thing. One is called Swig and one is called Sodalicious. And they are in a legal battle. There is nothing more that I love than good lawyering and Diet Coke.
This is right up your alley.
This makes me
nervous because I don't want them to destroy each other. But tell us what they're battling over.
So they are battling over the term dirty soda. And yes, you know, for those of you who may not be familiar, if you are having a mixed soda beverage, you throw a little cream into it, and then you slap the word dirty on it.
And it's called a dirty Diet Coke, dirty Dr. Pepper.
Dirty whatever.
Yeah.
And so they are battling over who can use the term dirty sodas.
Which I cannot believe. I think this is hilarious because everybody knows that this term was not an original term by the soda people. The alcohol people have been doing this forever.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So, or Swig stole it from like the dirty martini, right? Or whatever. I don't know. We don't know about alcohol, but we know that they have dirty drinks.
So we're presuming maybe it's a alcoholic beverage with cream. We don't really know. But we know that there's dirty alcoholic beverages.
We know there's dirty alcoholic beverages. So we do not think that Swig should own this term. And we hope that everybody can just love and have peace and drink their soda and eat their cookie.
Exactly. Okay, so the best part of this story is the companies, Swig and Sodalicious, were in court. Now, they're not in state court. They're in big boy court. They're in federal court.
Oh, it's in federal court?
It's in federal court.
Because of a trademark
thing? I think because of a trademark thing.
Okay.
So it's in federal court. And let me tell you, you want to stay out of federal court. Nothing good happens in federal court.
Well, plus, they don't even go to court for like a year,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It is. They recently went to court on a scheduling conference, and they are set for a 7-day jury trial. 7 days, folks, beginning November 5th, 2018. So we are talking 18 months away before the trial date. Now I am just kind of salivating thinking about this trial. I'm like, okay, if I'm sitting on the jury, I'm going to be like, okay, I'm going to have to try a soda from each place. You better bring the machine in. And if you're bringing me a soda, I'm going to want some cookies. So you better bring the cookies in too. I mean, I just think that, you know, outside the federal courtroom in kind of the hallway, they just ought to set up shop there and let the people decide. Swig versus Sodalicious.
I don't know. I think that might be considered tampering with the jury.
I'm envisioning the participants in the courtroom sitting there with their 32 ounces sipping away.
That would be a fun jury to be on.
It would be a fun jury to be on. Anyway, they also talk about in this article that that the judge's order indicated a fair chance of resolving the case ahead of trial. And so apparently they are attempting to resolve the case.
So they might mediate out of this.
They might mediate out of this, which brought me to, okay, if the crux of the argument is who gets to use the word dirty prefaced before their soda.
Right.
What other words could we perhaps suggest that that either one of them pick up instead of using dirty that could resolve this case?
Oh, so you're working on a compromise.
I'm working on a compromise for them. They should come mediate with me.
You should be on their legal team.
So I came up with some words that I think they could use to replace dirty in their sodas that I think would be really good.
Okay.
So how about a sordid soda.
A sordid soda. Oh my goodness.
Or an unscrupulous soda.
Oh my.
Or you like this one, a scuzzy soda.
I like the scuzzy soda. I think it's funny.
Or a disheveled soda. Because if you think about it, you're disheveling your soda by by throwing a little bit of cream in that soda. So you're ending up with a disheveled soda. Then we have maybe a sloppy soda.
Ah.
And my personal favorite, which was I'd ask my daughter at dinner tonight, you know, what do you think they should call these? She said, we should call them a naughty soda.
A naughty soda?
A naughty soda. That came from the 16-year-old.
That was from a 16-year-old. Okay.
Naughty soda.
I like it. I can get on board.
So, you know, I don't know who the attorneys are on the case, but I'm just throwing it out there. You know, your clients could come up with some really fun ways to describe their sodas other than a dirty soda, and it could be a win-win for everybody.
Oh, that's so funny. Yes. Okay. We hope they make peace because we want them to come to Idaho.
Yes,
still.
We do.
They can't come to Idaho if they're too busy fighting with each other.
Exactly. All right. So next we are going to move on to our favorite things. And one of our favorite things, of course, is TWIM.
That's right. This Week in Mormons.
We love This Week in Mormons. Not only the podcast that Jeff and Al do, but I also religiously listen to Sunday School Bonanza. I've never listened to Third Hour of Power. Sorry, guys, but I listen to Sunday School Bonanza, first of all, because I teach gospel doctrine, but also I love it. It's a great way to just for me to be able to go in and feel like I have some sort of an idea as to what the lesson is about. And so so Jeff and Al have started this new thing, and it's on Patreon. And Patreon is similar to Kickstarter, but not for individual projects. Instead, it allows ongoing contributions to content creators such as we humble podcasters, although we do not get paid for this.
Right.
Let's be clear on this. We do this because we enjoy it.
We think it's fun. But this will help the TWIM guys keep their website up.
Exactly.
And the expenses that go with that.
Exactly. So we would just like to stop for a moment and encourage you to become a supporter of This Week in Mormons at Patreon. Patreon is a way to support TWIM. It costs $1 a month and will help pay all the associated fees for the upkeep of TWIM and what's going on. So your small contribution plays a vital role in allowing our little TWIM community to flourish. So if you are interested, visit patreon.com/thisweekinmormons, and that's Patreon, patreon.com/thisweekinmormons. So
Okay. We
encourage you all to do that.
Yep.
All right, now let's talk about our favorite
things. Let's do our favorite things. Now, once again, these are not sponsored. These are just things that we like.
Things that we like.
We feel like we need to share with the world because
exactly.
They're good. So my favorite
thing. And if
thing,
we like them, somebody else must as well.
Someone will. Right. We're trying to share. My favorite thing this week was, it's actually the new version of Anne of Green Gables that is on Netflix. I'm a child of the 80s, so I loved the old 80s. I don't know, miniseries, I guess it was, of the books of Anne of Green Gables. Just watched those so much as a kid. So Netflix did a new one. It's called Anne with an E. I have been avoiding watching it for months now because I thought they will ruin my beloved 1980s version of Anne. But our sister, we have another sister.
Yes, we do have another sister.
We got to get her on TWIM someday, but we got another sister. She texted me a couple of weeks ago and said, have you watched this yet? And I said, no, I'm too scared. And she said, well, watch it. It's not that bad. So I'm 5 episodes in, so I don't know if I can fully endorse it. Don't be mad at me if something horrible happens.
Okay, so how many episodes are there?
I believe there is 10.
Okay.
Either 8 or 10. So I'm 5 episodes in, and I really like it.
Really?
Yeah, it's an updated version. It's a little bit heavier than the old 80s version. So
you're more mature now. You can handle that.
I can handle it now. I probably couldn't have as a child in the 80s. So they dive a little deeper into kind of the emotional stuff that Anne goes through. But I really liked it. I like the actors in it. And I like kind of the twist on the story. But they at the same time stick to a lot of the same story. So I'm endorsing it for now. 5 episodes in. Okay. I think it's great. If you're an Anne fan, don't be scared. Go watch it.
Well, I am a blank slate when it comes to Anne of Green Gables. I have never read the books. I never watched the 80s movies, and I haven't watched the Netflix.
I know. You need to get on board. You were in college in the 80s. You were too busy
to be watching. Well, the late 80s, I was in college. I was in high school in the 80s. I was too obsessed with boys to worry about Anne of Green Gables.
You'll need to go watch that sometime.
Okay. Well, and maybe I'll start with the next Netflix version.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my favorite thing that I want to endorse is I love this time of year. And one of the reasons I love this time of year is school supplies. Oh, I'm a huge fan of school supplies. One of my favorite things is, and I love these pens. They are called Pentel Energel pens, and they're really nice. They've got a really smooth writing surface, and they've got a little a rubber grippy thing. I spend a lot of time writing in court, and so I have total calluses on my writing finger, and it's just really easy to write with these. And they're usually, I mean, they're usually kind of expensive. They're usually like $2 to $2.50 a pen. But during school supply season, I can usually pick them up for about $1 a pen on sale. And so that makes me very happy because I really love these pens. The big negative with these pens is the people in my office steal them.
Oh, they do.
They do.
I thought you were going to say your kids.
No. I don't keep them at home. Uh-huh. I keep the cheap Bic pens at home for my kids. And I do not mind using the cheap Crystal Bic pen. I have no issues with the cheap Crystal Bic pen, but that's what the kids get. But in my office, like for example, today before I left for court, I had two pens in my little pen cup. Uh-huh. I put my pen back in my pen cup. I came back from court and I'm like, there's only one pen, and nobody would fess up to coming in my office and stealing my pen. So that's the bad thing about them.
They are that good then.
They are that good.
Okay, I have to
tell you, I have given packages of pens to everybody in my office. Oh. It's not like I'm stingy with the pens. Every single one of them has received a package of pens from me, but they still feel the need to come and swipe my pens.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, I'm going to have to try the pens. We cannot keep a pen around our house to save our lives. They're always disappearing.
Well, again, you have kids. Keep it in your purse.
Okay.
You don't want it anywhere where your kids can get it and confiscate it because you'll never see it again.
Okay. I'll have to check out the pens. All right. Well, I think that's it for this week.
I think that concludes our episode full of all sorts of traditions. Yeah. And we hope that you are continuing to enjoy your summer and enjoy whatever traditions that your family has. Please feel free to visit us at thisweekinmormons.com. There's also a Facebook page. There's Twitter. What else do they have?
Jeff and Elle
have a lot of social media.
All kinds of good stuff. You'll have to get on, and if you want to check out any of the articles we discussed, there will be links. And I think that's it. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it.
Hey, goodbye.
Just doing their job on the streets day and night. Police trucks and crews. His radio and checks the data on his terminal. Oh, these